making good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
Hi, my name is Laurie Murphy. I'm a registered dietitian and diabetes educator. I work at Ochsner in their diabetes management program.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
I got referred to you from Molly from Eat Fit. So y'all work together kind of in Ochsner a little bit. I'm assuming she's been there a long time as well.
Yeah.
When did you start working at Ochsner in the diabetes management?
I started working at Ochsner in July of last year. I worked at another place in diabetes education for about 5 years. So I have about, I guess, almost 7 years now.
Oh, cool. And you went to Nichols as well. I'm currently in that program right now, finishing the dietetics.
Yes, I did. It was a great place to go. The instructors over there, the professors are so good. So
yeah.
Dr. Scott, yeah.
It's been fun. Yeah, I have 1 year left, so I'm almost.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Can you just tell me, what exactly is diabetes, and what is happening in the body when your doctor says you are diagnosed with diabetes or your family member has been diagnosed with diabetes?
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion out there about what causes diabetes. The main thing that causes it is that your pancreas is not making insulin the way it used to. Mm-hmm. Variety of reasons for that. It could be in your DNA. You can't run away from your DNA. They do know that belly fat interferes with the way your body makes and uses insulin. So weight loss can play a big role in helping that insulin work better again. Most people, if you have an inactive lifestyle, things just don't work as well, so get moving. That's what we like to say. And then it could just be, it's time to change your eating habits. whereas you were a kid, your body made all the insulin it needed to cover all the sugar that was coming into your body. Mm-hmm. But now, you're older, things have slowed down a little bit, so it just doesn't work like it used to.
Yeah. And so what's happening is after you eat something that has carbohydrates or sugar in it, your blood sugar increases and the insulin then drops that blood glucose by your cells pulling in the glucose.
Yeah, that's pretty close. So all the carbs you eat turn into sugar. They get broken down into tiny little sugar molecules in your intestines, and then it goes through the lining of your intestine into your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. As soon as you take a bite of a carb, there are enzymes in your saliva that send a signal to the pancreas that sugars come and make insulin. So your pancreas gets turned on by that. And as that sugar comes into your bloodstream, insulin is going to try to grab onto it, pull it out of your bloodstream and take it to your muscle cells. And that's where you're actually supposed to store sugar. If your muscle cells don't have sugar in it, they send a signal to the liver that they're starving. So please make sugar.
Right.
Yeah.
A call and response.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah.
And what are symptoms that would indicate that you may have diabetes?
So rapid weight loss, sometimes people might lose 20, 30 pounds in 4 to 6 weeks and without trying, that's what'll get a lot of men to the doctor. Men notoriously don't go to doctors as often as women. So if they drop 30 pounds and they weren't even trying and nothing's changed, that's a clear sign. If you're really super thirsty all the time and you get up, 4 to 6 times a night to use the bathroom, that could, that's probably an indication that your blood sugars are pretty high. Mm-hmm. And then just feeling tired and exhausted all the time.
Okay. And you can just go to your doctor and say, these are kind of the things that are happening to me. And then what are some of the first steps that a doctor would do?
So they'll probably, do a finger stick while you're there, and then they'll order a bunch of labs, most notably the A1C. That tells us what your blood sugar has been doing over the last 3 months. Oh. Anything above 6.5 or higher, I should say, indicates that you have type 2 diabetes.
Okay. Eating carbs, right? The basis of carbohydrates are sugar molecules of all the food, not just bread, but any kind of
any kind of starch. Yeah. So rice, pasta, potatoes, grits, oatmeal, fruit, all of that breaks down into sugar.
Yeah. What other things I've done a glucose monitor twice, a continual one. I did it 7 months ago, and then I did make some changes, and then I did it again, and the results were different. But it was interesting because some of the things that I saw was it wasn't just eating that would make my glucose spike. There were emotional responses when I had a super stressful morning or really stressful commute. I had a big spike. It was interesting. I didn't expect that. And then exercise too. I box. And so boxing, it's super fun.
I bet.
I noticed that the boxing, I have a little bit of a spike too. So, how does that work? What other things are impacting you?
Yeah. So, anytime you're stressed, your body responds to stress by making sugar. And so, the liver gets a signal and it just starts making sugar. If you're sitting in traffic and your blood sugars go up a little bit, they're going to come down pretty fast. A lot of people say, oh, I'm just so emotionally stressed. Well, that's not going to put you into type 2 diabetes category, really. It's just every person's body makes stress at that time. Exercise, your liver is trying to release enough glucose to get you through that workout, because glucose is actually what gives our bodies energy. So, if you're working out and you've depleted everything that you had stored in your muscle cells, your liver's going to start making sugar to make sure you get through that workout. And then it'll come down, 30 to 45 minutes after you're done.
Which is different when you eat, because you have a 2-hour window where your glucose is kind of coming up and then goes down and then will probably come up again. And that's
learning. Right. Yeah. People who have a pancreas that actually works like it's supposed to, their blood sugars will go up. And then, when we ask patients to check their blood sugars 2 hours after a meal, we're looking for a number to be under 180 or 150, depending on what other comorbidities they have. That's why there's two different numbers. But typically, you want that number to be below those two thresholds, one of those thresholds. If it's higher than that, if it's always in the 200s or the 300s, then we know that your body's just not making that insulin. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And you talked about how we can't really run from our DNA. And so, especially down here, we have a lot of our family members. If we don't have diabetes, a lot of our family members do have it. So we're kind of used to hearing that someone we know probably has diabetes or is working on their sugars. And what do we need to know if we do not have it, but we have a number of family members generationally that even immediate family members that have diabetes?
Yeah, it runs in my family. And I was diagnosed with prediabetes 30 years ago. And that was before I became a dietitian. So, I'm a lay person. I don't know anything about medicine. I'm just, working at a marketing firm. And, that was what I was doing. And I I knew it ran in my family. Both of my grandpas had it. One of my grandpas was on insulin towards the end. But, you know, all I knew was that, oh my gosh, my first thought was I have to give up bread. I'm going to die young. There's no way. I love bread. It's my favorite food, always has been and always will. So it was a big learning curve, but it can be controlled, even though it's in your DNA. So I was able to turn it around, and I'm not taking any medication for diabetes right now. I do it through lifestyle change, and I do watch what I eat, and I keep exercising. One of the key things is to get moving. You know, you've got to use those muscles. You've got to make those muscle cells burn that sugar. When you're burning the sugar in your muscle cells, your insulin is able to stuff more sugar into it, right? So that's going to pull more sugar out of your bloodstream, keep that lower, and that sugar is going to end up in your muscle cells where it's supposed to go. So exercise is a big key. You can't out-train a bad diet, though. I don't know if you've ever heard that phrase. Yeah. There's just no way you can. So you have to change what you eat. Not necessarily you can eat certain foods, but now you have to start focusing on smaller portions of them. So that those one two things go hand in hand.
Yeah. One of the things that I learned in my last semester in the spring was that when you exercise, your muscle cells create more receptors that take in that glucose from your blood. So you literally just have your, each cell has more doorways.
It's true. And exercise actually kind of oils up those doors. So they're going to throw open their doors and go sugar party and be able to, you know, just bring all that sugar into the cells. And that's what's so good about exercise. So, you know, we try to teach people that, and it's not just a nice, easy window shopping walk, right? You've got to put some oomph into your workout. You know, we're looking for your heart rate to be elevated for a full 30 minutes, at least 5 days a week. That's, you know, like the minimum recommendation. So we try to help people find room for exercise in their life.
And what does pre-diabetes mean? So these are basically like numbers, right, that define pre-diabetic. Not pre-diabetic, not diabetic, and diabetic. They're just like classic lab numbers, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So pre-diabetes, you have an A1C between 5.7 and 6.49. And then type 2 diabetes starts with 6.5. So anything below 5.7 means you are in an absent state of diabetes. So that's kind of what works. I'm sorry about my screen.
It looks so like an abstract painting.
There you go. Watercolors.
Yeah. Okay. And so how, like, did you find out, I mean, if you want to share, did you find out you were pre-diabetic from just regular routine lab work?
No, actually, I was feeling pretty bad. It was so weird. Every morning at work between 10 and 10:30, I just get this really horrible feeling, a weak, shaky feeling. My knees couldn't even hold me. Like every morning I had to walk down the hall to drop some papers off at the under end of the hallway. And it was a really long hallway. And I couldn't even see, like my vision would go blurry. We didn't know what was going on. So it went on for 2 weeks before I could go see the doctor. And she said, you know, you might have diabetes. And I was like, oh. So we did the test. We did the glucose tolerance test where you drink something and they, you know, they check your blood sugar right before you drink. And then at the 1, 2, and 3 hour mark. So it's a long 4 hour wait at the doctor's office while they were doing it. But they told me I was borderline. So I had to make changes. You know, I started looking at what I ate and everything and finally understood that I could eat bread every day if I wanted to. I just had to watch my portion sizes. And I was like, oh, well, if I can eat bread, this will be easy.
I'm good.
You know? I mean, I thought, well, because I, you know, I just have to eat enough bread at one meal and then I can eat more again at the next. And that was kind of my light bulb moment. When that went off in my head, I was like, oh, I can do this. So
yeah. That's such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I did. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you think like we have to make, I think one of the things you think about is, oh, this is a huge lifestyle change where I have to kind of change everything about my life. And it's dangerous, right? Like it's, you really, there really are some, if you don't have your glucose kind of under control and you're not paying attention, there are some, there's, you know, very dangerous impacts, like your limbs, your feet and your, and so, but what we really can think about is making, we have a certain amount of starch that is fine for us to eat throughout the day. And we kind of just have to have smaller portions of the things that impact us the most. And I think about down here is rice. I could eat rice every single meal.
As do most of my patients.
Yeah, totally.
I know. So have you been able to determine the amount of rice you get to eat?
So I played around for the last like 7 months. I'm not pre-diabetic. I do have a family of many people in my family are diabetic. Mm-hmm. And I have some odd, over the last couple of years, we've seen some odd fasting glucose lab work. So that's kind of why we're like, oh, well, let's just look at it again over a longer period of time and see what's going on. And so I definitely have cut down my grains a lot. I do about a fourth cup is basically a little, so about a fourth cup of rice at any meal. And I definitely save it now because I will eat all the rice at one time. Like I can't, it's like ice cream for me almost.
I know. I'm like that with shrimp and grits, you know, grits, another grain, right? And it's pretty similar to rice. I know it comes from corn, but you eat too much grits, your blood sugars are going to spike up. So yeah, I have to be careful when I do shrimp and grits.
I save it. I save the things like that for when I really, you know, am like, I really want some nice, something like that. So,
well, when you wore your CGM, were you able to tell like how high rice spiked you up?
That's interesting. I don't think that I actually, well, I don't eat white rice really anymore.
Okay.
I eat kind of now, and then that is a change from before when I was noticing. Also, I got super sleepy. I get really, really tired after.
That's a classic sign your blood sugars are high after a meal if you get really sleepy afterwards. Yeah.
That started happening to me a lot in the last year or two. And I was like, this is weird. This is something new. And so that's kind of what we started looking at. And so now I eat a mix of grains. I don't eat like just a cup or, you know, or a fourth a cup of white jasmine or something like that. I will eat it with that has beans and all different types of things in it.
And that's really good because you're getting the benefit of that fiber from those other foods, especially beans. And fiber slows down digestion. So instead of all of those, starchy foods being broken down all at once and kind of rushing into your bloodstream, that fiber kind of slows down the process, the digestion process. So then they start to trickle in. Right. And then your blood sugar doesn't go whoosh. It goes, steady out a little bit more.
Yeah. So this last time I had no spikes for the 2 weeks that I had this monitor, but I had like, you know, what my dietitian said was like rolling hills or something like that. She said in the thing.
You could definitely see it happening after you ate.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, food is a big impact on blood sugars. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was an interesting change. And I tested those portions, but I also did, another thing that I had seen recently is dressing up your carbs, you know, like adding, so like what you're saying, so adding more vegetables if you're going to eat, some rice or grains or something like that. And then also, which I think is interesting, I haven't read any studies on it, but we were talking about eating your vegetables first and then your protein and then your grains and having a bit of time.
I've read a few studies on that in the last month. My best friend and I were talking about it. She's a dietitian too. And because she had a really tough patient. And so we were talking, you know, trying to come up with things that she could try. And the order you eat, they said eating vegetables first really does slow down the digestion of the carbs if you eat the carbs last. So if you eat vegetables, protein, and carbs, those carbs aren't going to spike you up near as much as if you ate them at the beginning of your meal.
It's so interesting because when I first heard that, I was just like, that doesn't seem real. Like that, you know, because you're still eating like in an amount of time. But there are. But
think about it in layers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about it in layers. You know, if what you take in first takes way longer to break down, it can't break down the other stuff. You know, it's not going to break down the other things faster. It's kind of what's coming into your intestines. You know, that's where digestion happens. So it's going to break down what's coming in first. And if, you know, the fiber foods are holding up the rest of digestion, right? So it's just a slower response. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. When I'm in school now, I didn't even know. It's been so interesting learning about digestion or like what the food is happening or what the cells are doing, each of the cells are doing in response to different foods that we're eating. You know, it's just so interesting. Yeah. I had no idea.
I know the body is fascinating. It's an unbelievable thing. Like, how on earth did we get to this point? You know, our bodies they really are. It's just unbelievable to see the way it works.
Yeah. And it's just constantly working on your behalf, like in your cells, your muscle cells, or your liver specifically is just always working on your behalf to.
Yeah.
Everything a little, you know, so you can process everything better and more efficiently than that.
Yeah. Kidneys are a big workhorse too. You know, kidneys are going to push excess sodium out of your body. It's going to push excess sugar, excess cholesterol out. So it kind of helps the liver in that respect too. So yeah, everything is so interconnected. And that's why really high blood sugars that stay high for long periods of time can affect the kidneys. You know, that's when we start seeing that kidney failure. And then if the kidneys fail, that means the heart and the liver have to work harder to take up the slack that the kidney can no longer perform. And so those organs are now, you know, well, the heart isn't an organ, it's a muscle, but now the heart and the liver have to take over from, you know, from the things the kidneys can no longer do. So, it's really important to try and get blood sugars down.
And what is there a definition for like diabetes that is uncontrolled? Like, are you looking at numbers or like how long can you not take care of something like that?
Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've worked with a lot of doctors in my 7 years, so they all tend to have like different things they want to see for their patients. Endocrinologists have much tighter parameters on numbers than an internal medicine doctor would, or you know, a family doctor. So, and that's because endocrinologists, I guess they work more with people with diabetes and other endocrine, you know, things that go wrong. And they just know the damage that high blood sugars can cause throughout the body. So when I'm working with an endo, they usually want to see blood sugars below 6.5. Family or internal medicine want to get blood sugars down below 7. Does it make a big difference? Yeah, it really does. You know, people that keep their blood sugars below 6.5 are going to have much, much better outcomes, especially with heart, you know, lower risk of stroke, heart attack, lower chance of any, you know, losing any limbs, like you had mentioned earlier. So, you know, it really is we have seen quite a bit less risk when you're below 6.5.
And part of the with your like feet and your lower limbs is your circulation ends up being pretty bad. Is that what happens
all
the time?
Yeah, because if you think about it, when your blood sugars are high, that means you've got all this sugar in your bloodstream, and your blood flow is supposed to be loose and watery. But when it's thick with sugar, it becomes thick and syrupy. So you know, your heart is responsible for pumping that blood throughout your entire body. Is it, here we go again, is it easier for your heart to pump loose, you know, well-flowing blood, or is it easier for your heart to pump thick syrupy blood?
Right.
Right. So your heart has to pump with enough force to get the blood to go all the way down to your toes to make it come back to the heart, right? It's got to come back up to the heart. So if good blood sugar control is, you know, it's you, if you have lower blood sugars, your heart's able to pump more efficiently. Red blood cells carry oxygen to tissues all throughout our body. So if that oxygen can't reach the tissues in your feet, right, your toes, you start losing some kind of feeling. You can't tell if you've stepped on a nail or have a cut on your foot. And if your blood sugars are super high and you don't have that feeling in your feet, you know, that's when we start seeing infection. And when that infection gets to the bone, that's when we see the amputations. Because once it gets to the bone, it can run up pretty fast all the way up the leg. And, you know, so it can be pretty devastating.
Yeah. Especially if you work. I mean, we're such an outside culture here. We spend so much time doing things together outside, parades, fishing, hunting.
Yeah.
It's like a big impact in our quality
of life. It is,
What are some like specific foods? Well, first, I have two more questions. One, can you solve diabetes? Like, can you cure diabetes?
There is no cure for diabetes right now. They're working hard on it, you know, but so much is involved in diabetes. They just haven't found a cure yet. We know there are a lot of things we can do, you know, to make it better. And that is by eating well and the exercise, taking medication if you need to. Some people, through no fault of their own, they just need medicine. It's, you know, it's not their fault. But if they don't make changes in what they eat and get the exercise in, then they're going to have issues even if they're on medication. So, you know, you have to do lifestyle changes that, along with medicine, that's going to really help lower, you know, your risk of complications from diabetes.
Yeah, I just think about, like, you know, there's so much nutrition advice now, and you hear sometimes people being so flippant about it, of like, if you do this regimen, you will cure it. You won't have it anymore.
Yeah.
Or the opposite of, you did this to yourself, this blaming, when it's such a part of our genes down here at this point.
Yes, kind of it is. Yeah. So, you know, you can't help that your pancreas doesn't make insulin or as much insulin as it used to. But to make your pancreas produce insulin, you know, or to help your insulin work better, making those changes is really going to help, and taking your medication. You can't do it without making a change, right? It's, you can't drink yourself, you know, drink sugary drinks and become diabetic. You become diabetic because your pancreas doesn't make insulin to cover all the sugar in those sugary drinks anymore, like it did when you were a kid.
Right.
You know, so
I see. What are some, are there specific foods that you recommend people maybe bring into their diet more? Or what are some of those beginning like changes that we can do? We talked a little bit like limiting our grains per meal, and kind of learn that through trial and error, maybe what's best for your body at different times. Or what other suggestions can we do?
Yeah, so the number one thing, if you're diagnosed with diabetes, just don't drink sugar. Even people on insulin cannot control blood sugars if they drink sugary drinks. And that includes juice, any juice, yes, orange, apple, grape, cranberry, whatever juice you're going to drink. If it's got sugar, it's going to spike you up. Sodas, of course, sweet tea, big down here, right? Trying to think, lemonade, snowballs, always choose zero drinks. You know, anything that says zero means zero calories and, you know, zero sugar. So just trying to just, you know, drinking water. There's a lot of flavored waters out there that don't have sugar now. So those are going to be way better to do. And then from there, you know, if people are monitoring their blood sugars after meals, then one of the things they can do is check their blood sugar after they eat. You know, like if red beans and rice is their favorite meal, I'm like, well, eat your normal portion, check your blood sugar, see where it is. And then, you know, next time you eat it, you cut back until you find, you know, where the right portion keeps your numbers under either 150 or 180, whatever we've set for that patient. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's kind of what you need to do. You do need to change what you eat. You can still eat grains. We do stay, again, the sugary drinks, and then anything that's just a frank sweet, like cake, like cookies, ice cream. You know, try to eat fruit. Fruit has a lot of fiber in it, doesn't have as much sugar as the cookies or the ice cream.
Right.
Because people can't stick to just two cookies.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
They're going for 5, 6, 7 cookies. None of my patients can eat just a half a cup of ice cream, you know, so it's going to be a bowl.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. A half a cup is really small when you start measuring it out.
It is. So, you know, if you, you know, I'm not saying you can never eat those, but that's not something you should eat every day, every week. Try to save things like that for those special occasions to make it special. Yeah.
Great. Okay. I have one other Louisiana question. Can you drink alcohol when you're a diabetic?
Ooh, that's a loaded question, huh? I know. I can't watch a Saints game without a beer.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear that a lot. I need a drink. The Saints are on Sunday. What can I do?
Yeah.
Totally. Like, I get it. Trust me. So alcohol, pretty much now the standard is one, not more than one drink a day for men or women. If you don't drink during the week, you can't drink all 7 on Sunday during a Saints game. It's still one drink a day.
Yeah.
When you drink alcohol, you shouldn't drink it on an empty stomach. You know, we talked about the liver making sugar for us, you know, and it'll step in if we're in a famine kind of state of, you know, if we're just in a state of famine, our liver is going to start breaking down, you know, fats and protein and converting that to sugar. Mm-hmm. If you start drinking on an empty stomach, the liver gives priority to filtering that alcohol out of your system and it doesn't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol is considered a toxin or a poison by the body. And so the liver gives priority to filtering all toxins and poisons out immediately. And so if you are drinking and you have no food in your tummy, you could get a low blood sugar. A low blood sugar mimics drunkenness. And so a lot of my younger patients say, my friends thought I was drunk, but I was having a low blood sugar. I said, then we need to talk to your friends about being able to check your blood sugars, you know, when you're drinking. Because if you're having a low, you could die. You could go into a coma and die. So that's a big thing. If you're going to drink, again, I don't recommend more than one drink, but eat something first. You don't have to eat a huge meal, but, you know, have some chips and bean dip, you know, get some carbs in with some protein, have a few of that first before you actually do start drinking.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was so interesting.
It really is. I know.
Yeah, it's been an interesting, we learned a little bit about it. And this semester we also did the calculations of meals. And so how many carbs and protein and all of those things, if you are a diabetic, do you eat throughout a day? And that was pretty interesting. Like, there is, yeah, sugar. It's math. A lot of it is math that you can do.
Yeah. 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 And usually, you know, we try to follow what the endocrinologists say. Again, they have stricter parameters than like the American Diabetes Association, but I usually start with most of my patients, like females, 2 to 3 carbs per meal, and men, 3 to 4. If my females are very petite, we're going to limit them to 2 carbs because they just don't have the extra body mass to, you know, store extra sugar. So they're going to have to eat a little less. You know, if my females are 6'1" and they're athletes, then they might get 4 carbs, you know, because they're moving around a lot. So we really try to focus. So we start with general principles and then just try to find the right, you know, fit for each individual patient. So females, 2 to 3 carbs, males, 3 to 4. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're welcome. This was fun. I could talk about this stuff all day.
Yeah. It's interesting. Well, I can tell that you really like your work too, because you're lighting up as you're talking about everything. So.
Yeah, I love it. I'm just so thankful and grateful that I'm in the position I'm in and just being able to help patients understand how food affects them. You know, when they drop their A1C from 14 to 6.5, that's just huge, you know, and it just, I'm just so happy that they were able to take the information I gave them and apply it to their life because, you know, they're adding years to their life just by doing that. So yeah, it's so rewarding. I just love it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome. Good luck in school. I know you're going to do well.
Thank you. I like it. I have 1 year left, so I just have to get through.
And then you're going to internship?
A master's. Yeah. So they have that requirement. You have to get a master's. Looking at a few places, but Tulane is, they have a new program. It's a master's in public health in nutrition. Yeah. And the internship is included in the master's program.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. So
that's really good.
Yeah. So they just started, they're starting that next year. So, okay. I'm looking at that and looking at a couple other schools, but yeah, we'll see.
Okay. Good luck. Do you know what area you want to go in, or, cause I didn't know when I hit my internship, I was like, I'm interested in everything.
It's very interesting. I think I want to do chronic diseases. Yeah. Like, and I think maybe mostly cardiovascular issues in town. So, yeah.
That's my second interest. That's where my second interest lies. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I guess there is, you know, it's so much. It's, and I guess there's time too. I can try different things.
Yeah, there's time. But I knew during my internship, when I sat in on when I did my diabetes rotation, my outpatient, I was like, oh, this is it. This is where I want to be. So awesome. It was it. I knew it. So yeah.
Great. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. It's been a lot of fun. Okay. Bye.
Bye. Have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Well, that's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.